now. Thanks. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to this slightly perfect edition, perfect I say, of Technology Bites.
I don't want to spoil it. Welcome to Technology Bites, I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Hooray.
Notice I'm not humming in the background.
Yeah, that's good.
Unless you're
I got rid of the hard drive the top of the desk and making that sound.
So
I couldn't hear, but the microphone could pick up.
Wow, it was a hard drive.
Yep.
Was it external?
Yeah, I'm sure it's probably due for replacement.
Time to go SSD.
Was it an external hard drive then? Just sitting
yeah. There? Yeah. Yeah, it was my Time Machine backup on my machine.
Wow.
Thanks a lot, Apple.
Oh, no. I mean, it was a Western Digital.
But it was caused by Time Machine.
It sounded kind of like, you know, to me, it sounded like the background wind noise of Warcraft, World of Warcraft, or kind of like you're, like, in an airplane cruising at, you know, 23,000 feet or something.
Or possibly background noise for a Time Machine.
I'm actually secretly an oil millionaire, and now what's happened is I have a silent plane. I was flying all those times. I didn't fly to Houston and come to the show. I would just fly around out in the Gulf of Mexico broadcast to the show.
You got early access to Elon Musk's whatever
electric
that thing.
Plane.
No, whatever that thing was, the tubes that were going to use, pneumatic tubes to transfer people at super fast speeds.
Hyperloop.
Hyperloop.
Yes,
that's
I'm in a vacuum sealed tube now.
Okay, that's well, it. Let's talk about your millions.
Yes.
And the upcoming fun drive.
Oh, well, I plan to have them all spent by then.
Woohoo! Black 48! All right. Well, welcome to the show. Of course, we're glad you could tune in. And, you know, we're it now that HalPC is closing their doors.
Yeah. That's sad. That's what Barrett Time was going to be about, had there been a Barrett Time tonight.
So, oh, that's getting canceled, too?
Yeah. Well, the light company decided to close the doors on our building. We blew a transformer about 3.5-4 hours ago.
Is this
ago.
A promo for the movie?
Yes. What will they do? Where will they go?
Who blew the transformer?
I'm assuming lightning. Yeah.
That's the lightning, is that one of the Autobots?
That's the NC-17 version.
All right, so, okay, you blew a transformer.
Yeah, so I did not have time to do Veritas. I got a good start, but it was kind of the dearth of HalPC.
Did the red light stop blinking for a little while after that?
No. And the pod bay doors are still stuck.
Okay, get ready to drop this call.
Can we hang up on the control booth?
All right.
I got a tweet. There was a tweet from William Gibson, the author, who said that...
He tweeted you? Hey, Pete, what's up?
Yeah, because only to me. It was a direct message. No, I mean, he tweeted out. He said instead of watching the Transformers, he went to the dump and had a crazy man throw lawnmower parts and yell at him for 2 hours.
Nice.
Now, I didn't know this. Do you guys know the voice actor who did Eeyore, who he voices as far as Transformers go? He did it in the cartoons, I guess, back in the 80s, and I think he did it for this movie as well. But he did Eeyore, Winnie the Pooh. He did a lot of like stuff in the 50s.
Well,
I don't know the actor's
name. Not in the 50s. He does
60s?
It now.
Oh, well, no, he still does, but he's got a very long career. Because I think he was doing the Winnie the Pooh stuff in the 70s, wasn't he?
No, because Sterling, what's his name, the guy who really sounded like Winnie the Pooh just in his normal voice, was still doing it.
Was Winnie the Pooh and Eeyore, were they the same person?
Oh, no. No.
Oh, I just
Eeyore was the first one he picked up. I mean, he basically started picking up as the actors died off.
No, but whoever it is, it does.
Here's what
I'm
the point is, Optimus Prime in the 80s cartoons, and I think in the current movie now, is voiced by the voice actor that did the original Disney Winnie the Pooh animated series, like Winnie the Pooh and the Blustery Day. He did the voice of Eeyore. Which I didn't know, but I read that. If the internet can be
Optimus
believed.
Optimus Prime and Eeyore are the same.
Yes. Let me just fact check that real quick, but I'm almost positive.
Looks like Google.
I'll just destroy I'll just protect the Earth.
Yeah, Peter Cullen.
What was that thing that they had, the Optimus Prime had inside of him?
Oh, the something.
Something Matrix.
All
yeah,
Spark.
The power. All Star, yeah.
The All Spark.
All Spark. All Spark. All Spark. Can I borrow those Transform episodes on VHS, Pete, the next time you come down? And the next time you fly over Houston, can you just chuck them out of the plane?
I'll drop them out the window.
Yeah.
And deliver them with a rotocopter.
I'm going to need VHS player as well.
All right, 713-526-5738 is the number you're going to want to call a little bit later on. But right now, you can visit us on the website at geekradio.com. You can also come... play with us in IRC, Internet Relay Chat, irc.cuckoo.com. The channel is Tech Bytes, and if you want to use your own client, that's cool. But if you don't know how to do that, you can use our web client at geekradio.com. You can click on the IRC chat link and come on into the show within a show. You can, listen to us live on the radio or on the internet. So we're streaming via kpft.org, and that's about it. I got a new camera, so I'm very happy. It's a technological marvel.
Cool, a Polaroid camera?
It is.
Doesn't he join the 70s?
Flap, flap, flap. I shake it like a Polaroid picture.
400,000 Polaroids per frame, or what is that? How does that work?
4K.
It's the new fast develop. It comes out of the camera already processed.
If you take a big stack of Polaroids and flip them really fast, it would be like a
1080p.
Super, yeah.
1080 pages.
So Jay's camera shoots video at a resolution that most people don't even have the ability to display at this point. It shoots 4K video.
Shoots 4K. It's quite nice. It's the new Sony A7S, which was shipped on Monday. And I pre-ordered it, so I got my my hands on one. I mean, there's a handful of them floating around. Reviewers have had their hands on, so it's been easy to research.
I recognize Zeiss.
Yeah, the Carl Zeiss lens. I love my Zeiss, and this is the lens that they make. The smaller lens is also Zeiss.
You know what happened to the A5S model? Somebody wrote it down and saw what it looked like.
All right, we can no longer produce this in good conscience.
What?
Fourth graders are giggling.
A5S.
It's leet speak for like BU77.
Let me see. We're just going to wipe that one gone. All right, so anyway, Technology Bites is going to be with you till 10 o'clock. So if you want to call in a little bit later on, you have a computer question or you have some concerns or questions, you want to, you know, lift a pint to the memory of Hal PC, you can call in at 713-526-5738. But in the meantime,
I was going to say, that's awesome for us. We're going to pick up all of the, like you said, we're going to pick up all the Hal PC people, so we should get at least
another five or six more
listeners.
People. Yeah. when the stalwart members of Hal PC realize that we're the only choice, our numbers are going to grow by the half dozens.
By now, they've learned to use their AOL, so they can probably go to the internet.
Well, they stopped going to Hal PC when they stopped getting free AOL discs in the mail. So I don't know what to do. I don't have anything to show off. You know, so their geek gathering consisted of, you know, CompuServe discs showing off. What was that?
Dog.
That was the new hard drive.
That was the new improved dog. He doesn't bark, he just shakes.
This hard drive has fleas.
Did you see that that Dwight decided to try out T-Mobile?
I saw
so
that.
He got an iPhone 5 to test out T-Mobile to see what their, I guess, what their bandwidth and what their
coverage
is like where he is. So far he hasn't been particularly
excited. Returned it.
Did you already return it?
Yes.
It was just like 2 days ago he got it, I think.
Yeah, he returned it. He said it didn't get good bandwidth at his house.
Yeah. Uh-huh. See, I don't have an LTE phone device. But I switched to T-Mobile like a year and a half ago. And I definitely did notice that the spectrum of coverage where it covered was not as good as with AT&T when I had them. But
fortunately, where I am, I just switched over because I needed to get some. I have my youngest kids have gotten old enough where I really wanted them to have a phone, and it didn't hurt that then that meant I would like buy a new phone and pass mine down to them. So I got an iPhone 5S and I swapped to T-Mobile. The thing that pushed me over is I was looking at the AT&T plans and all that because, you know, now they've made some adjustments to, you know, address what T-Mobile's been saying and, you know, try to supposedly have a better, you know, like when you've paid off your phone so they don't keep, what did the T-Mobile guy say, raping you? So I was looking at that I didn't sit down, you know, I kept trying to figure out which plan was really the most effective and all that. And then finally I saw somebody online said, well, they'd gone through and done the math on all of it, and it was exactly the same. Every single plan, if you buy a phone, you give AT&T the same amount of money, regardless of if it's that like 12-month and you can replace your phone plan, or the 18-month one, or the 2 years one, or any of that. They basically, you know, just played a shell game with it where it looks like, oh, well, you know, you can choose the plan that works for you. And it was all just a big, from my point of view, it looks kind of scammy.
You're choosing the plan that works for them.
Right. We'll choose the plan that works best for us, for you. And so so that was enough. I looked at it and it's like, okay, then T-Mobile, I looked at it and it's like, here's what it costs for my data and all my stuff. Here's what it costs for the phones. Oh, and it's still less than AT&T? Well, done. So I swapped over. I will say the iPhone 5S, I didn't feel compelled to, you know, update until I just needed, you know, when I had to get a new phone. I wasn't going to go buy a brand new iPhone 4S to replace the other one. I was really surprised how much lighter the 5S is and how well the how much I like the unlocking the phone with your thumbprint. You just, you know, so I can leave my phone locked all the time, and then when I, you know, like when I, because I used to like turn it on and off depending on what I was doing, turn on the you know, where you have to put in a code to unlock your phone. And now you just put your, you just let your thumb sit on that button a second before you click it, and it's all unlocked and ready to go.
So if someone steals your phone, they have to steal your thumb?
No, you just put the severed thumb on the iPhone for like a second, and you're good to go.
So, but
hand over your phone and your thumb. Here's a pair of hedge clippers.
So, no, so far I've been, you know, the thing is, obviously, I'm not in the part of Houston where Dwight is, so I haven't had a problem with coverage. And,
which phone do you have?
I have the 5S.
So the 5S?
He had a 5. Dwight's phone was a 5S.
The 5S supports the fingerprint?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only one. That's the top. That's the current top of the line until, oh, like, what, 2 months from now when they announced the 6?
Oh, that's right. They have the 5C and the 5S.
The 5C is really the 5 in a different container.
Right. Yeah. Oh, Apple, you're so wacky.
And the rumors are that they're going to put the rumors are that, rumors are that they're going to put the that thumbprint recognition thing on the iPads going forward. That's for this fall, supposedly.
All right. Well, let's
do the news for real.
Let's do the news for real. So let's, with intro music and everything, because this is the perfect show. Take it away, perfect show.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
This episode of the Info Shot is brought to you by Optimus Prime.
Actually, no. It's brought to you by me. But anyways, here's an interesting one. You know, you ever thought that Facebook was messing around with you? Or you can use whatever word you like there in your mind. Facebook caused a stir over the weekend with the revelation that it had been altering the content of some of its users' news feeds in an attempt to study the psychology behind what causes people to post emotional material. Now, Adam Kramer, Facebook data scientist and co-author of the study, has posted an explanation of why the motivation behind the research, which he says serves as Facebook's statement on the matter. Quote, "The reason we did this research is because we care about the emotional impact of Facebook and the people that use our product," says Kramer. "We felt it was important to investigate the common worry that seeing friends post positive content leads to people feeling negative or left out. At the same time, we were concerned that exposure to friends' negativity might lead people to avoid visiting Facebook." And then he said, "And now, tell me how that makes you feel." Kramer notes that the study affected only 0.04% of users over 1 week in 2012, though at Facebook's scale, that covers hundreds of thousands of people. So was there a week in 2012 where you were like kind of particularly bummed out or particularly manic? The study's findings contradicted conventional wisdom, according to the scientist, as seeing positive emotions on Facebook was found to encourage similarly positive content. Wonder what about negative? In a separate statement provided to The Guardian, Facebook said the research was designed to, quote, "improve our services and to make the content people see on Facebook as relevant and engaging as possible." So it's all happy all the time. Having written and designed this experiment myself, I can tell you that our goal was never to upset anyone, says Kramer. Oh, Kramer. Oh, my gosh. That just explains everything. This is basically an online performance art version of Seinfeld, apparently. So, Kramer, Jerry. No, I can understand why some people have concerns about it, and my co-authors and I are very sorry for the way the paper described the research and any anxiety it caused. In hindsight, the research benefits of the paper may not have justified all of this anxiety. Kramer says that Facebook has improved its internal review practices since 2012, and future experiments on the public will take the reaction to this study into account. Really, you think? Yeah, torque off a bunch of people with a psychology experiment on your users, and then maybe you'll want to take that into account in the future. In more name-calling news, in an unusual order, a federal judge last week told Apple that it may not call a Hawaii-based company names like Patent Troll or Privateer or Bandit, nor tell a jury that the company is engaged in a, quote, shakedown or, quote, playing the lawsuit lottery. Wow, now I don't know what Apple's even going to have to say. U.S. District Judge Lucy Koh issued the no name-calling rule ahead of a trial in Silicon Valley that pits Apple against GPNE Corp., which is accusing the iPhone maker of infringing old patents related to transmitting data over a network. So what does GPNE Corp. make? You know, what's their product? What's their business if they're not a patent troll, privateer, or bandit? As it turns out, they don't make anything at all. Instead, it has a website and a suite in the Honolulu office building from where it appears to do nothing but make licensing demands for its patents. In other words, it fits the classic definition of a patent troll. Judge Koh, who is a veteran of the smartphone industry patent wars, has nonetheless agreed with GPNE that the term patent troll could confuse or prejudice a jury. She did, however, permit Apple to tell the jury that GPNE is, quote, a company that doesn't make anything, or, quote, a company that doesn't sell anything. So it seems kind of lame. And here it is. Here's their patent. According to GPNE's websites, one of its owners found traditional pagers to be limiting because the recipient had to phone the sender. As a result, quote, Gabriel's vision was to invent a system that could transmit data two ways without having to rely on the separate return landline telephone call in response to a standard page message. So, I'm betting, you know, this was done in 1996, his patent. I don't think pagers and two-way networks worked over TCP/IP or worked in any way like the iPhone, or that Apple went back and looked at what this guy's patent had in his vision. Anyways, you should – that will be this frankly to me, since I'm not under the judge's order, sounds like patent trollery to me. So, it's sort of unfortunate that basically the shorthand for calling a troll is not allowed when you go into court. You just have to say that they don't make a product or sell anything. Of course, now I'm just waiting for when they put Tim Cook on the stand and he just goes nuts. The CEO of Apple goes nuts and starts calling them patent trolls and, I doubt that'll happen, but, now it's all kind of new stuff. People aren't announcing new things, so it's kind of rumory. Microsoft's smartwatch has long been rumored as a device that competes with Android Wear, Samsung's Gear watches, and any future hardware from Apple, but it might not take the form of a watch. Windows Watcher, pun, I guess, intended. Paul Thoreau reports that Microsoft's smartwatch will actually be a fitness wristband with multiple sensors designed to track steps, calories burned, and heart rate. So, in other words, Microsoft is rushing to sometime in the future release the Nike product that people had 2 years ago. Maybe it's just me, but that seems like that's been there and done for quite a while. Images in a recent patent filing from Microsoft could offer an early glimpse at where the company is heading with its fitness band. The patent filing from May includes hardware that resembles a fitness band with icons for running and heart rate. Thoreau suggests Microsoft will price its fitness band around $200, and it will also reportedly display smartphone notifications and work with iOS, Android, and Windows Phone. Working across all major smartphone operating systems could be the key differentiator, and that may be part of why they're only doing sort of the fitness thing, or mainly the fitness thing, because, you know, Android Wear only works with Android phones, and Samsung stuff only works for Samsung phones, and Apple's rumored iWatch will, you know, I would be shocked and amazed if they made that some sort of cross-platform device. So that ain't gonna happen. Some other new stuff. This one's kind of wild, you know. It will make Jay's camera that much more useful in a year. Smartphones and tablets will be able to transmit 4K video directly to big screens next year, Now that mobile chip maker Qualcomm has acquired Velocity. Velocity makes chips based on WiGig technology, which wirelessly transfers data between devices at speeds up to 7 gigabits per second over limited distance. Qualcomm is going to integrate that technology in its 64-bit Snapdragon 810 mobile chip. It said Wednesday when it announced the acquisition. The first smartphones and tablets with WiGig will ship in the second half of next year. Device makers will ultimately decide if they want to use the WiGig chip in smartphones and tablets, but that could, you know, one of the things that this directly competes with is possibly the end of HDMI ports in mobile devices and would limit clutter and connectors required to transfer data or 4K video. WiGig is faster than Wi-Fi 802.11ac and LTE mobile broadband technologies, which are already in Snapdragon chips. So, you know, it's still not quite where, you know, how many people have a device that they can actually watch the 4GB stuff on, but clearly the ability to move that much data around is coming online a lot quicker than maybe one would have expected. And finally, somebody did a really cool shirt. I guess it's a matter of – this shows – you know, we've talked before about how much your phone – you know, how much horsepower your phone has computer-wise and how much of a difference that makes nowadays that your phone carries around more stuff than, oh, like everybody at NASA had when the space program was going. This is along those lines. To celebrate the 30th anniversary of Tetris earlier this month, game enthusiast Mark Kerger applied his programming and hardware skills toward creating what might be the ultimate wearable tribute to the game, a playable Tetris T-shirt. Yeah, that's cool. The Luxembourg-based tinkerer, inspired by an earlier LED hack of a pumpkin, used 128 LEDs, an Arduino Uno microcontroller board, 3D printed housing and soft material for the buttons, and two Adafruit Matrix controllers. All the shirt needs is four rechargeable AA batteries to power the game. Along with the hardware components, Kerger also designed a T-shirt to house the construction, which features visual design elements that correspond with the hidden hardware controls. There's a video if you go to Mashable and look up Tetris, I would think. Kerger can be seen playing the game in real time on his torso. After he finishes a level, the shirt's screen displays a level number and score, just like the arcade games of old. He didn't give detailed instructions on how to make your own, but if you want to give it a shot yourself, you might start out checking the same Instructables project that he based his design on, which you can, it's the Pumpkins, Pumptris, P-U-M-P-K-T-R-I-S, the Tetris Pumpkin. So if you look that up at Instructables, you'll have it. And then one last just oddball story that I stumbled across. A grandmother in Japan bought a building as an investment. She bought this building, and I don't think she looked at it. It was in another town that she didn't live in, but she bought this building. And when this is the new, you know, there were the old stories about where somebody goes to buy a car that's in a barn and it turns out to be, you know, like a Shelby GT500 or something that's just in mint shape with a, you know, that got put in the barn before the son went to Nam or whatever. Well, this is the new equivalent, which is the grandma bought the building, and when they opened up the building and went inside to, you know, start making it usable, it was full of classic arcade game cabinets that still worked. Apparently there was an arcade in the first floor of this building, and they closed it when they just shut down. They just closed the doors, and they closed the doors of the building, and it sat there till now. So I think there's a really high chance that the devices, that, you know, all those consoles inside that building are probably worth more than she paid to buy the building. So next time, you know, the problem is here in the United States, we don't just close stuff up like that. You know, there's not an arcade other than in the movie Tron 2. You don't just close up an arcade and have it just sitting there. You know, we always like wreck it, or, you know, do the more Wreck-It Ralph thing. You know, we always wreck it or get rid of them or sell them or whatever. So I think it's highly unlikely that somebody will find the same thing here, but you can hope. You might just start buying random old buildings and see if you can find a bunch of classic arcade games. And that's I'm Peter Hughes, and that's the InfoShot Technology Bytes news.
Thanks for that, Pete. All right.
So wow, that's the worst Optimus Prime I've ever heard, Jay. Or is that supposed to be who's the bad guy?
That sounded a lot like Flicted.
That was me impersonating Flicted making fun of me. Who are the enemies of the Transformers?
Decepticons.
Decepticons. The Flicticon. The Flicticon.
I would attend Flicticon.
You are.
You are attending Flicticon.
You do weekly.
Where's my badge?
Every Wednesday.
Where's your badge? Ha ha. All right. So, welcome to the show. We've got the news knocked out. We are ready to move on to the phone-in portion of the show. So if you want to call us tonight, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us this evening. We are entertaining your calls, 713-526-KPFT. You know, we were talking about HAL PC is closing their doors after, gosh, how long have they been around? 25, 30 years? I know Bill Gates spoke at one of their SIGs, and they've had some pretty there's a great video, by the way, and I think it's on the Cron. If you do HAL PC and Chronicle or Cron.com, you'll find Dwight's article, and he's got a link to the video of him speaking.
Super young and funny.
Funny.
Not that he's not funny now, but I was like, wow, he could be an MC.
He is funny, you know? Funnier than funny. He's funny looking, too, because he's got dark hair, but he's still not, you know.
He's still Dwight.
Still looks a lot like Dwight.
Well, there's still HOG, Houston Area Apple Users Group, still tenuously exists, right? Does the FM1960 PC Users Group, has that gone away? I know Jay spoke at it, I spoke at it in the past. Are they still around, or
I don't know.
The website says yes. They are. And then HAL PC was founded in 1982, so 32 years they've been around.
Wow. So, yeah, they announced to their members that they were going to be shutting the doors, and the interest had waned so much that they just couldn't justify keeping going. So they're going to stop. They're going to cancel the auto-renew on memberships, but they're not refunding any memberships.
End of September is when the HALPC.net goes down, so if you're getting dial-up or anything.
It's HALNet. Have they officially announced that that's going away?
I heard from ex-show guy David Fretz that was what it was. He also had access to like membership numbers and a lot of different stuff. But yeah, he said the email that was sent out said that services are going to run through the end of September and then no more.
Okay, because I read in the article that Dwight had written that somebody said that they were looking for someone to take that over.
Oh, that would be neat if they did, but yeah, someone's going to have to step in and assume that. So I guess the age, this was going to be, you know, the Veritime thing, but I guess the age of, you know, personal computer, that's gone. Because that's back when, you know, like, you had to say personal in front of computer because no one really had a computer. The idea of having one in your home, or, you know, not having to share one with, you know, 20 other college students or what have you, is kind of a new thing. And now we've flipped it. It's inverse to where instead of, you know, a bunch of people sharing one computer, you've got one person. And, you know, Jay's camera is a computer. He's got a phone. He's got a laptop. Multiple computers.
Right.
So I guess the relevancy may be a little bit. It just kind of...
Well, it's so much a part of everyday life now that people are, you know, have computers, you know, smartphones and cameras and laptops.
Well, and they work without you having to know, like, secrets or be taught.
Right. You used to have to, if you got a computer, it was so alien and there was no internet to go to.
Well, yeah, Google has probably changed a lot of that, too. Google killed HAL PC because instead of actually having to go to a users group meeting and talk about stuff, you just go do some searches and maybe join a forum or, you know, Google Groups or ask a question on something.
Right. So
Stack Overflow.
There was not as much of a need to kind of have a support group now that, you know, sobriety is built into every bottle of Jack Daniels or something. I don't know. It's a... It didn't seem to me that HAL PC was doing much to kind of stay on top of the current technology. They weren't. Their Facebook has not been updated. Their Twitter account hasn't been updated. They did not kind of jump into the social media aspect. And I think that was it's they just kind of lost their relevancy.
Would
they?
Yeah, well, and their you know, their last big gathering where their lead speaker was Windows 3.1.1 is the operating system for me. DOS for experts. No, just kidding.
DOS forever.
DRDOS turned 20 yesterday.
GUI user for wimps.
Well,
and then they looked out in the audience, and it was full of people with iPads and Android tablets.
A lot of stuff started there, though. I know, like the Houston Palm Users Group was presidented or ran by Matt Mullenweg, who went on to get into WordPress and make that a big deal. Houston Linux Users Group kind of had its digs there for probably a decade or so. There was a lot of community stuff that came out of there. So
a lot of people got taught how to use computers that. You know, I mean, that they I don't know, it might be an interesting experiment to see how many we helped and how many they helped, but between all of us, I think a lot more people got into using computers or got to be able to use computers than would have otherwise.
Well, I definitely think that they served a great purpose in terms of being able to share a lot of information in their heyday. I mean, you know, you can look back at the videos of the Windows NT versus OS2 warp shootout that they had in 1992 or whenever that was.
So that's what Dwight's talk, that they talked about that. So the Windows guy came in and was very much, you know, like button-down shirt, very boring. And then the OS2 guy I thought was pretty fun as far as speakers go and was just running circles around, you know.
But there was also a huge crowd.
Yeah.
Which is also funny because OS2 was IBM.
Yeah.
Well, the times they are changing, so we may have to turn off our internet access and cancel our memberships. People, our membership's canceling itself. All right, well, it looks like we have some calls coming in. If you want to be on the air with us again, the number is 713-526-5738. What was that?
That was cool.
Can someone oil Flicted?
Flicted's moving his microphone around and it's making obscene noises.
The all spark is going. My mind is going.
Stop it.
Groovehouse had to compete.
I have to.
Such a cool noise.
This could get out of hand really
quick. Are we still doing a perfect show?
No, forget that. All right, Groove House.
The sounds of whales making.
So now we've gone to freeform industrial jam.
It's the avant-garde show.
Usually you'd have to wait till 3 a.m. to hear this.
Yeah, usually you have to stay up past your bedtime on a school night to hear this kind of entertainment. Well, let's open up the phone lines and see who we have. Greg
Oh,
House?
Yeah.
We should have a Foley show.
There you go.
Walk over here and tell us about our and put on our next caller.
Where'd you get them coconuts? Okay. You want to take some calls?
I'm hoping something will save me from this.
All right, then.
A duck.
First up on the show, we are going to speak.
You're on the air with Technology Bites. Yeah, he came. Did you not have him turned up? Hey, Winston.
I had to end the perfect show.
Can you guys hear me?
We can.
Okay. My question was, I was listening. There's a bit of an echo here, but I was listening to the June 18th info shot, and you guys mentioned in there that the internet speeds were faster than they were supposed to for certain vendors. But I am supposed to get 25 megabits per second, but when I go to speedtest.net by Ookla on the internet and they rate my internet speed, it always ranks around 5 megabits per second. And I was wondering if you guys have any insight.
Who's your provider?
Comcast.
Okay, and how are you connected to the internet with the device that you were testing?
Well, first of all, there's the cable, then there's the cable modem, and then I have a router, and then I have a switch.
Okay,
and it's hardwired. It's all
hardwired. Okay. Well, one of the things you want to make sure is that you're not causing any kind of bottleneck with your equipment.
Okay.
So one thing you might try is taking the Comcast cable modem itself and going from the, you know, connecting that directly to one of your, to your computer.
Yeah.
And if you do that, you have to reboot everything so that the modem detects that the computer is now the internet, you know, the device that it's going to give internet access to.
Yeah.
And then test the speed using your computer.
Gotcha.
Without your switch or, you know, and make sure your cable, you have the best cable you can get, and make sure, and if you're still getting 5 megabits per second download using a cable connected directly to your modem, then Comcast is not delivering the service that they should be.
Okay.
I would also say, instead of relying on just like one speed test,
yeah,
go and do a couple of others and take the average. I know that, in fact, Comcast has a speed test. I think it's speedtest.comcast.net.
Yeah.
And then I like Speakeasy because you can bounce off servers in Dallas. That's speakeasy.net/speedtest, or just Google for speed test.
Okay.
And, you know, do two or three, and then you take the average of that because,
well,
that's just how the internet works.
One I was using, and I would have thought that if I went to Comcast would just look up in the table. Okay, he's supposed to get 25.
Well,
okay,
they won't do that. Now, they will keep you inside the Comcast network, but if you're getting extremely low speeds on the,
yeah,
Comcast speed test, you know that it's something inside the Comcast network, you know, or something between Comcast servers and your actual machine versus, okay, the interlink between Comcast and the speed test server I'm trying to hit is slow.
Okay.
So going to Comcast native thing, then you can also, that's a little bit of grounds to complain if you want to call in and fight Comcast like Jay Lee was successful in doing a while ago. You can call in and say, hey, I hit, you know, your speed test servers and it's saying I'm getting 5 and I'm hoping to get 25. What can you guys do?
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, I appreciate that.
And again, so what, just to finish up the train of thought, is that if you do determine that you have slower than you should have speeds, then you do, like Barrett said, you have to kind of get on Comcast and make them come out and check out, make sure that the wiring is good. I know that I was not having so much slow speeds as I was just having a lot of drop connections. My modem connection would go down.
Yeah.
And they ended up having to come out and rerun the wire that connected my house to their equipment.
What symptoms were you having that said you were dropping the line?
I could watch the modem. I have the modem on the shelf where my television is,
okay,
and I could see all the modem lights, and I could see it. You know, when it's working, it's 5 white lights, all solid, and I could see it drop down to 2 or 1 lights and then blink. And I could go online. I could connect to it. I couldn't get online. My internet had gone down. And I would watch that thing slowly start blinking its way back up to 5 lights. And then I'd have internet again. And then it would drop again. And then sometimes it would stay solid and work for a couple of days. And then it would start doing it again. But turned out they had bad cable coming to my house.
Okay.
But it took them 3 visits to get them to finally fix it.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think I can maintain a good connection. It's just that it just seems to be kind of slow.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's not, I mean, if it's not dropping, you know, just out and out dropping, then you need to figure out where the slowness is. And the slowness could be caused by your equipment. You could have a bad switch. You could have a bad cable. You know, you could even have a bad modem from Comcast. So you can go to the Comcast store and swap it out. They'll swap it out, no questions asked.
Okay, well, those are good points. I'll try the direct connection to the modem first, and then I'll try, if it's slow still, I'll swap out the modem, and then I'll complain to Comcast.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, appreciate that. Thank you all very much.
All right, thank you for your call. Have a good night.
Night.
Speaking of something we didn't mention earlier, the Geek Gathering is this Friday, July 4th. You know, get your Patriot on. America.
All right.
713-526-5738. Details are at geekradio.com if you want to come out.
Hey.
What?
Barrett, you did,
What's happening?
At the shootout there, the Windows OS 2 shootout, Did the OS2 guy, who seemed kind of quirky and zany, have like the beginnings of a wizard beard and work at NASA?
No. That was not KD5?
Yeah.
No, he wasn't the main speaker. I don't think he was the speaker that I was talking about, but he just said he was on Team OS2 at that shootout. Yeah.
That's what I was asking.
No, not him. This other guy is much more flamboyant than KD5.
No. How's that possible? All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We have plenty of open lines. We've got two calls in the queue, though, so Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
This is Gary with your history of terminology update. You may remember last time we talked about the origin of master and slave relays. Now I want to tell you about PCs. Back in the 70s, a PC was about the size of a carton of cigarettes, and we put them in industrial motor controllers for drilling rigs and various controllers. And then one day someone came in and said, well, this is a new product. It's called a PLC. So, well, what are you talking about? So, well, we always buy PCs. Well, PC meant programmable controller. But they changed it, GE did, actually, GE and Square D, to programmable logic controller. So now we had to buy PLCs because some company somewhere came up with personal computer. And that's a true story. Just a little interesting tidbit for you. The terminology changes.
The more you know. Okay. Thanks for your call. All right.
Dun, dun, dun.
I don't know what to say to that.
So PLCs were once called PCs, or the PC evolved out of the PLCs?
No, he's saying that they were called PCs until they came up with the personal computer, which kind of hijacked.
And that kicked out the PC into PLCs. Okay.
Yes, exactly.
So they felt compelled to change their name so they could still be underground.
Ha ha. Drilling joke.
Ta-da-ns. All right, 713-526-5738. We got open lines. Groovehouse, who do we have up next?
Up next, we are going to speak with Tom.
Tom, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening. I have a new laptop, Toshiba. I don't think it has anything to do with it, but I need protection for my computer. And at Fry Electronics, I see Kapinski, Norton 60, 360. Want to know which one would y'all go with? Or should I do something on the free side?
Well, you know, this question comes up a lot, and my philosophy at this point is that there are some very good free options available to you. So you have AVG free, you have Avast. There are a number of free antivirus solutions out there, so... And they also tend to be really, really good and light antivirus service because, you know, it's so much better than the free ones. But so what I would recommend is that try one of the free ones. And then if you like it and it seems to be working for you and you've got money to spend, then register it and pay for the paid version of it.
Okay, so all of the freebies are going to 30 days or 90 days start sending me rude messages and wanting money from me.
Well, they may have a little bit of a nag built into them where they say, you know, we'd like for you to pay to update this, but they won't force you into it. But you don't want to be nagged, if you don't want to be bothered, then get the paid version.
My AVG rarely nags me.
Right?
Yeah, it's very uncommon for it to pop up and say, hey, send us money.
And that's Alpha Victor Golf.
Yes.
Okay. Now, another thing, I've got an old HP that the display terminal, the TV screen, whatever you want to call it, went dark on me. But the computer still runs. I can plug a slave monitor into it and get information. Mm-hmm. But it just got so slow and so corrupted with stuff, I went ahead and bought this Toshiba laptop. How do I get my old data off of that bullet?
Well, since you can actually connect a display to it, you can log into it, you can copy the files that you care to off to a thumb drive or to an external hard drive.
And see, I'm the guy before me was super geek. I'm nothing geek. So, is that a hard process, or what do you do with it?
Well, it's not a hard process. I guess the hard part becomes knowing where to look for the files that you care about.
Okay.
So if you can find the files, if you can find the folder that has, say, your picture files in it or your document files or so forth, is what they, what operating system is it running?
Windows 7.
Windows 7. They have a file transfer wizard where you can tell it to, you can go into Windows 7, and I haven't used it in a long time, but it's called, I think it's called File Transfer Wizard.
Yes, sir.
And if you run the File Transfer Wizard, what it will do is it will go through and get all of your important files and write them out to a disk. So you connect an external hard drive to the computer, you run the File Transfer Wizard, transfer all your files to the disk, you take that disk over to the new computer, you plug it in, and you use the File Transfer Wizard to pull the files off the disk, and it puts it back onto the new computer.
Even if my new computer is Windows 8?
I believe so. But if you, okay, if you do some internet searches on File Transfer Wizard, I'm trying to do that right now, but my internet here is going up and down. Let me see if I can...
Okay. And that disk, could it also be a thumb drive?
It could be, as long as it's big enough to hold the data.
Yeah, because mainly what it is photos and a few docs, a few written, you know, resume, et cetera, blah, blah, blah.
Actually, it's called Windows Easy Transfer. And, or File and Settings Transfer Wizard, but if you, that's actually XP. But Windows Easy Transfer, if you Google that, it's an actual program you can download, and that will take you. And there's instructions online on how to use it. So let's see, if your old PC isn't running, you need to run the. Yeah, it's designed to move file. It's, you just use the part of it that's just going to be interested in copying the files, not necessarily copying applications or copying any program settings, but you want your resumes, your documents, your image files. The other option is in Windows 7, you can just go to your user profile and find your document folder and grab that whole thing and copy the contents onto a thumb drive, and then find your documents folder on the new computer and copy them back in. So that's probably most of what you're going to want.
Documents does include photos.
Yes, my documents will have all your image files, your videos, as well as your Word, Excel, and so forth, documents like that.
Great. And y'all are having a thing on Friday somewhere?
We have the Geek Gathering. Our monthly Geek Gathering is going to be at Cons. We have information up at geekradio.com if you want to come out.
Well, I'm going to check it out. Thank you, fellas. Y'all have a wonderful day.
All right, thank you for your call. Have a good night.
You want to say... PC guy on RSU is saying that Easy Transfer doesn't work over the network when the destination computer is Windows 8.
Yeah, but I was talking about using an external drive. I wasn't about to try to tell this guy how to do it over a network. But thank you, PC guy.
He could set up like a Linux server and then do an NFS share then do singles.
Well, if we want to get complicated, you just share a folder on one computer and connect to it from the other computer and copy the.
Can't you get one of those Laplink cables?
Why can't you just put it all in the cloud?
No, don't put it in the cloud. Stay away from the cloud. Hey, you.
So is our network being?
It is. Our internet is so floppy. Fickle.
The Windows machine in here keeps popping up. The LAN connection is going up and down on the call screen in here.
Yeah, my Wi-Fi is bouncing all over the place.
Peter keeps dropping and saying he can't hear stuff, and then he drops over and over.
I'm doing a constant ping here, and it goes. It'll run for a little while, and I'm getting like 2,400 millisecond. Ping time. So,
is there like a hub, or is there anything that's loose? Because it's odd that this computer would actually lose its Ethernet connection. They would say
mine's
like
Ethernet
the cable's
connected.
Disconnected. Yeah, so something's got to be bouncing up and down on the power side.
Yeah, it may just be that the router needs to be jiggled or rebooted, but I don't have a key to get it.
Maybe somebody from HalPC got mad at us.
They're hacking us.
Were we getting internet through them? Surely not.
We might have been.
All right, so all of our lines are quiet. We're moving towards the top of the hour, but if you want to call in and get in the queue, you can dial 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. As I was mentioning earlier, the Geek Gathering is this Friday, so we're going to be holding that for the 4th of July, so why not?
2808 Milam at Drew in Midtown.
Technically, it is our 19th anniversary, so we'll be kind of pseudo-celebrating our 19 years of broadcasting on the airwaves here in Houston.
Are we going to do an official party, or is this going to be it?
No, official party.
This is it.
No. We've got too many irons in the fire things going on this year. But the big 20 next year, as long as we don't shutter our doors between now and then. Yeah, that is kind of distressing, seeing that thing is losing its connection. It's got to be a hard one.
That's wired in. That's a physical link that's going up and down, and it's also distracting. It's just too annoying.
PC Guy was asking if we tried turning it off and on again.
If we could.
If we could, we would. I wish I had access to that room, but
I don't.
You
know how to fix these kinds of problems.
If we yank it real hard. What? Oh, block. You should do your lock picking thing.
I don't have any on me.
Oh.
We could ram the door with Flicked or Groove House.
The Tool Lock Picking Group, I saw they were on, I don't know, there's a show on BBC called Quite Interesting, hosted by Stephen Fry. And one of the segments they did, they were talking about lock pickers, and they actually put the Tool logo up, and they talked about them and the fact that their philosophy was not to pick a lock they didn't own.
Yeah,
and how, you know, their
Tool
their code
is
of ethics.
The open organization of lock pickers, so 3 O's in Tool. But yeah, they teach people how to lock picks, and they've got like ethics that go along with that, and they're really neat. They look at it as like puzzles to solve versus breaking and entering.
And also demonstrating security flaws and weaknesses.
Yeah, show you
why.
People
might want to patch up. But there you go. All right, well, we have a call in the queue, which we'll get to in the second half of the show. We got to take a brief pause here and do some station business. So we're going to do that and see if we can jiggle some internet cables or something. And we'll be back after a few brief messages here. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee. Hey, yeah, whatever. Perfect show.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groove House.
We'll be right back after these messages.
We've all played that game. What's the CD that you'd take with you to a desert island if you only had one choice? Maybe it would be something by... Or maybe it would be a disc from...
Mr. DJ, can't you please play a real country song?
Well, let's play that game now, but with a twist. What radio station would you take to a desert island if you only had one choice? There's only one answer to that question. It's KPFT, of course. We bring you great music, news, and information each day. You depend on us to keep you up to date. And radio that's worth listening to is radio that's worth supporting. 90% of our funding comes from people just like you. Without you, KPFT would be gone. So visit our website today, kpft.org, to become a member. You are listening to Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
The
Pronto vendrá un pledge drive a KPFT y nosotros necesitamos su ayuda para hacerlo un suceso. Por favor, considere ser un voluntario para contestar nuestros teléfonos durante el programa de lenguaje en español. Usted contestará escuchadores como usted y ayudará esta comunidad de radio. En no más una hora o dos, usted puede ayudar a tomar donaciones. Su esfuerzo será la diferencia a poder ser esto un ambiente divertido. Personas interesadas en contestar teléfonos necesitan que ser disponibles los martes y sábados y ser bilingües en inglés y español. Usted será un voluntario en el estudio de KPFT en la 419 Lovett Boulevard. Para escribirse, contacte nuestra oficina de voluntarios al 713-526-4000 o mándenos un email a voluntier@kpft.org. Esto es KPFT Houston.
That means you're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Not bit!
to bring you the perfect show.
You weren't paying attention to the perfect show. Awesome.
The perfect show ended with all the Foley work.
What was unperfect about that?
And then the internet got messed up, so Peter dropped, and that was... That's it. That ended it. It's all over.
I think it was Groovehouse making his
game noise. Over, man.
Game over, game man. Over. Game over. All right. So 713-526-5738. We do have a call in the queue, so we're going to go to that call here since we don't have a Barrett time. But we'll let you know on the calendar of things to consider. It's a Geek Gathering this Friday, so go to geekradio.com and you can learn about where, when, and how, and all that good stuff. And hey, you know, 4th of July weekend, you don't have any plans. Come on out.
Don't go to Hal PC.
Yeah, and there's no Hal PC meeting this month.
That's right. 2600 is laying in wait. All right, so Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have?
All right, up next on the second half of the show, we are going to speak with Kristen.
Kristen, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
So I have just started working for a really small company, and there's actually just three associates who share an office with another company, and we all have Macs, and apparently the other two associates are able to print to this giant Xerox, you know, that they share with this other company, and ever since I got there, I can't, and nobody seems to figure out why or how, but the person from the other company told me that somebody before me had had trouble because they thought it was connecting with the internet, trying to use their internet, the other company's internet, instead of mine. That doesn't make sense to me, because why are the other two associates in my company able to print to that printer and I'm not? I feel like I've tried everything, and, you know, one of the other guys is pretty bright and he can't figure it out. So I'm wondering if you might know any reason that mine wouldn't connect when others would wirelessly.
Wirelessly to the printer?
Yeah.
So it's a wireless printer, obviously. Or is it a wireless print server?
Well, that's a good question. I don't really know, and I'm sure that makes a difference to you, but I know that everybody in the office connects to this giant Xerox wirelessly. It's a, you know, it's a fairly new Xerox, you know. So
I'm and everybody sure else has Macs.
And, no, all the other people in the other company have PCs, but the other two people in my company with Macs have no problem printing to this printer wirelessly. So why do I have a problem?
Do you know if they're associating with, like, the Wi-Fi network in the office, or are they associating with that printer?
I'm pretty sure that they're associating with our Wi-Fi, because the two companies have two different Wi-Fi accounts, obviously.
All right, let's simplify this just a little bit here. You mentioned there's two companies, right?
Yep.
Okay, let's go down to one company, the company that you're in.
Okay.
All right. Your company, how many people, give or take?
Five
people. Four of which can connect to the Wi-Fi and print to the printer?
Yes.
Okay. Is one of those people using a Mac?
All of those people are using Mac.
All of those people are using Mac. So your four coworkers in that office connect to the company Wi-Fi and they can print. They're not connecting to the printer. They're actually connecting to Wi-Fi internet, which it also shares, and they have the printer and they can print to it, right?
Yes.
Okay. So you're connecting to the same Wi-Fi.
Yep.
Do you see the printer?
Yeah, and it's actually, when I pull up, you know, obviously the printer has been connected to the computer before because it shows up in the drop-down menu. But when I try to print to it, it gives me an error message, and it says, looking for printer, but it never finds the printer.
And you're sure you're connecting to the same Wi-Fi that the other four people are connecting to?
Yeah.
Can you do, have you tried deleting that printer entry
and, no, and trying to recreate it?
How to do that? You should
yeah,
just be
I'm
able
sure
to go.
Somebody in my office could tell me how to do that, though.
That
you
might
think
be.
That would solve the problem?
Because it's, well, it's possible that maybe that at some point in time that printer got moved to a different IP address or mm-hmm. that printer broke and they brought in a replacement printer and your computer still has information in it for the old printer. And so it's trying to connect what you think is the same printer, but it's actually trying to connect to something else.
Oh, that's brilliant. We hadn't tried that at all, and that I hope that would work, because that sounds like a decent option. And that's very possible, because they've had a couple people in the role that I'm in now that have just, like, moved out, or they've been fired or whatever. And so I know that computer has been through a lot of changes, and I don't know if the printer has.
Were they fired because they weren't doing their printouts to that printer that they were supposed to?
They weren't able to print.
God, I hope not.
If you don't print that document, I'm looking for you out of here.
Okay, so I will try that tomorrow. If there's anything else you can think of that I could also try, I'm willing to
The only other, I would try removing the printer and then re-add, going to the add printer mumbo-jumbo on the Mac and see if it picks it up.
Verify that you're on the same wireless, too. I mean, just click on your little Wi-Fi symbol and see what network you're on, and then with the people that can print, and just make sure you're on the same network.
Double
check. Check and see what theirs says, and check and see what mine says.
And then,
says.
Yeah, right. Make sure they're not somehow connecting directly to the printer when they print. Like, if they're connecting directly to the wireless of the printer, like it's a local wireless offering.
Right.
And they're normally on your network, but when they go to print, it actually flips over to using a direct connection to that printer or something.
Yeah. Great. Well, that's very helpful, guys. Thank you so much. I'll try both of those things tomorrow.
All right. Well, good luck. Thanks for your call.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. You know, we talk about the demise of HAL PC and their loss of relevance and the fact that they could not keep things going after all these years. So we just want everybody to know that we're relevant. And we appeal to young people. That was a young person there.
Hey, young person, want some candy?
Come
we're
ride.
We're a cool hip show.
Come ride the Tech Bites van.
Come ride in the plain white, off-white van of Technology Bites as we drive around Technology Town or something. Hey, it's Pete. Did we get internet again?
How would you like to take a ride in our IROC Z?
Because
we're cool and relevant. Our VHS player doesn't even have a corded remote.
We have dual cassette players. You can dub a cassette with us.
8-tracks are so out.
We don't use 8-tracks anymore. We're totally using cassettes. And it's a dual cassette deck, like,
I've even got a Discman that I can hook into my car with a cassette adapter.
We have laser discs.
I have Tron. We have Tron on laser disc. Because we're state of the art, man. All right, 713-526-5738. Because we're so state of the art, we still use telephones to have our listeners call in. So if you want to be on the air with us tonight, if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, and you have a question to ask about computers or technology, that'd be great. If you have a memory of HAL PC, that'd be awesome. 713-526-KPFT.
If you've got a microcassette recorder that's not working right.
Yeah.
Or a microcomputer.
I have a mini SD recorder that's not working right.
We know the Konami cheat codes.
And we're not afraid to use them.
We've leveled up many, many times. So we got internet now, I guess? That's Pete, I hear, right?
Who knows for how long?
It's the ghost of Pete.
It's the ghost of Pete. All right. 713-526-573. There's no World Cup going. America's been knocked out, or USA has been knocked out.
Oh, really?
Out. Yes.
Oh. Spoiler. Well, I didn't know.
Well, it wasn't like he was going to tune into the game that he had recorded it or something. Or
you were waiting to watch that game.
I was waiting to hear about it.
We also got knocked out of the World Cup 4 years ago.
No way.
In case you weren't paying attention then.
That's how to make this year even worse.
8 years ago? How'd we do?
We got knocked out. Well, we made it all three times.
12 years ago?
Knocked out.
I'm not sure if we made it. I don't even think we were there. I don't think we made it 12 years ago. But I think we made it 16 years ago. But got knocked out.
20 years ago?
Didn't make it, I think.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
This whole soccer thing's a passing fad.
Well, Ann Coulter says it's making us less American.
Yeah, I saw that. She's trolling us all, really desperate to say something that she thinks might be controversial and get her some kind of response.
Is that what it is?
Oh, yeah. It's just because it's just kind of, I mean, her whole set of arguments were just kind of stupid. I mean, it doesn't make sense.
No, it does not. All right, well, all of our... Oh, there's a phone call coming in,
yeah.
Yay, hooray, we're being saved from our irrelevance. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We are taking your calls, and, wow.
I actually watched some soccer on TV. I think I watched about 2.5 hours of warm-up. There are all these guys running around on the field back and forth, and not much was happening. That actually might have been the game. That might not have been a warm-up. Is soccer really that slow?
You know, when you watch soccer, if you get into it at all, and you can, even if you think you don't like it, you can watch it for a while, and you'll start to pick up the nuances of the game. And I found that my World Cup viewing is best on a TV with a rewind, or if you have Comcast cable with the DVR service or whatever, you can rewind live television, because you can basically have the game on and be working on your computer doing something else that's happening in the background. And when they start screaming, then you can look up and rewind to see what happened. Or if you don't have rewind, if they do make a goal, you can watch them replay it 100 times from every angle.
Yep.
So, you know, it's not.
But sometimes that's, I don't know. I like soccer. So
I have to confess that, you know, I'm a fair weather fan when it comes to soccer. I'm not going out to see any Dynamo games or anything yet, and maybe that's coming, but watching the World Cup and watching the different players play has been a lot of fun, especially like when you see how really good they are when they do score, like, you know, when the guy kicks the ball from across, you know, from the side, you know, does the cross kick and puts it in, and somebody then, you know, just the way it arcs and that somebody can actually be there to meet it and head it into the goal. And when it all comes together and they do it right, it's amazing.
I think also you can learn how to, you can get skills that you can use in the office, you know, faking injuries and faking stuff where it looks like somebody hit you when they didn't. And all that could be really useful at work.
It'd be cool if you could throw yellow cards and red cards at the office.
I thought I would take
advantage of that.
The one thing that I really enjoyed this year was there was enough interest, because I think soccer is getting more and more popular because people in America are now playing it as kids, so they're more interested in understand how the game is played as young adults, and that'll continue to grow. But I thought it was really nice, as you know, a lot of people that aren't interested in soccer like to talk about how soccer's not a contact sport. It's not aggressive. It's not manly. You know, whatever. And then, you know, and then they talk about, like, you know, football players or whatever, where, you know, I forgot who it was, Roethlisberger, whoever, like, had a problem with his, I forgot what, his tendon on his leg, and he was, like, was bleeding through his sock, but he kept playing. Like, these people persevere through pain to play these real games. So I thought it was really nice when, you know, in the 20th minute of the U.S.-Ghana game, Dempsey got hit in the nose with a foot, and his nose was broken. He went off to the sideline, because you can't play while you're bleeding. Went off to the sideline. They stuffed cotton up his nose, so he couldn't really breathe through his nose. And he went on to play the next 70 minutes of the game with a broken nose, where he's running around all the time on the field, bumping into people and stuff. Dempsey's also a Texan, so that helps too.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Calls.
We do have calls. So, Grewhouse?
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Nomas.
Hey, fellas, long-time listener, first-time caller. Got to tell you, listening to you fellas talk about the World Cup is about as exciting as watching my brother play soccer video games on the iPad. Question here. I found a bunch of Betamax tapes on the side of the road the other week, and I rustled up a Beta player. And, you know, I got to say, after the first tape, Debbie Does Dallas, classic, put that one in, worked like a charm. Next one, they're getting all torn up in there. Really wondering what's going on with my Beta player.
Well, that was much more interesting than soccer.
Oh, sure.
So, seriously, you found a Beta player, a Betamax player, and watched Debbie Does Dallas?
You got
about as much as you could get out of it, so appreciate that. Welcome to the 20th century on your video watch. All right, so anyway, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites.
And back to soccer.
I thought he was going to tell us that hearing us talk about World Cup soccer was just as bad as watching World Cup soccer. But he didn't go there.
No.
No, he went to Dallas.
See, I've actually watched a lot of the games.
I've watched several. Not a lot, but I've watched several. And
I missed a few of the really good games. But I watched quite a few of them.
I watched a lot of Facebook posts about a lot of the games.
Really?
Unintentionally. You just can't really help yourself these days.
I didn't actually ever post any messages, I don't think, about the U.S. games at all. In fact, I think the only time I ever posted was after Mexico and Netherlands played. And Netherlands knocked Mexico out by Mexico getting called for a penalty in the box. So they got a penalty shot in like the extra time, and Holland got it, and that's how Mexico went out.
I was driving through Houston, and I heard this great radio program about
Betamax.
Oh. All right. We got calls in the queue. Phone number is 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air, but we are going to go to the calls in the queue now and be on the air. So, Groovehouse, who do we have?
All right, up next, we are going to speak with Christine.
Christine, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi. Okay, so I work in front-end web development, which means I have a lot of devices because I have to QA check. And I watched that NSA Edward Snowden front line, and it made me really paranoid. So on my Mac and my PC, I put, you know, HTTPS everywhere and did DuckDuckGo and all that, and then the same on my Nexus tablet. But I have no idea how I can secure my iPad, and I was wondering if you had any advice.
What are you trying to protect against specifically?
Just in general, the NSA, not that I do anything, but I don't know. It just made me really nervous, and that people could get my information so easily. And so, like, the iPad, you know, has my email, and it has documents, and...
Well, here's the reality is that if you're worried about the NSA... They're getting it before it gets to your iPad or gets to your computer because they can get it from the provider.
Providers,
plus they can get it as it transfers from wherever it came from across the any internet backbone to get to the mail servers.
So if you're worried about protecting your data from hackers, your iPad and your iPhone, your Apple iOS devices tend to be very, very secure.
Okay.
It's not like a hacker can get onto the iPad and steal your information off the iPad. Not easily.
I would turn off. Can you turn off auto join wireless networks on the iPad?
Yes.
That's the one thing I would do because I'm seeing a lot of coffee shop traffic where people are running with these little wireless things that say, hey, I'm your home network when they aren't.
Okay.
I think Barrett knows about those.
I used to be the only one running that now. And I used to run it and just for fun, not for nefarious purposes. But I've seen a couple of signatures out there. People are running them in coffee shops. So turn that off.
Okay. And then, I have the passcode thing that's longer than 4 digits. And then I don't know what else I can do other than turn off GPS and stuff. So I just want to make sure I was doing everything.
Are all your maybe you've got a Gmail account and a Facebook account and maybe like a Twitter account or whatever, are all your passwords different for all the different sites?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, that's a really good step to take is to make sure that you're not using the same password to connect to mail that say you're using to connect to your bank or other services, and also make sure that you're keeping all your passwords rather complex.
Okay.
And make sure on your iPad and that when you're doing your mail that you're doing SSL for the connection. Or you can look into using VPN with your iPad. So if you're in a coffee shop, you know, the reason for that isn't to stop the NSA, but if you use SSL, you know, make sure you're using SSL to connect to your mail server, then your login and password don't get passed over Wi-Fi in the clear where anybody who's sniffing the Wi-Fi network can get your password and login.
Okay, I will make sure that's going on. Okay, thank you so much. You're a big help.
All right, well, good luck. Thanks for your call.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. All right. 713-526-5738. I see someone else is dialing in, but we also have someone in the queue. So, Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, it's going to be Richard.
Richard, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Well, thanks a lot. You guys are doing a great job.
Well, thank you.
Listen, I need some advice on a digital camera. What I'm trying to do is take pictures of the CD art. So I can put it in my media player. And I don't know anything about digital cameras. And so can you help me out?
So what do you mean you're trying to get, like, pictures of your CD covers so that you can add it to your iTunes library or whatever, your digital media library?
That's correct.
Do you have, first of all, I know Barrett wants to chime in here, but are these CDs that are commercially available, or are these like independently produced CDs?
No, they're commercially available.
Services like iTunes, for example, can connect to an internet database that has all the album artwork.
Well, I know that, but this is incredible, but I do not have an internet connection.
You do not have an internet connection.
That's correct.
That is incredible.
Yes, it is.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
All right. So what you want to do is then manually go through, take a picture. I wouldn't do it with a photograph. If it was me, I would maybe use a scanner.
Okay. Well.
Because then you could take the CD cover, you know, the little piece of paper out of the jewel case. Lay it flat on a scanner and scan it and get the exact image and get it cropped to the right size. And then you would have a JPEG file or a digital file, but I didn't even know how to manually go.
You would
in
also have more control over the quality of it with a scanner.
If you try to take a picture with a camera, it's going to be lopsided.
Well, you have to hold
the camera. You have to get the angle right. You have to get the lighting right. All different kinds of stuff. You probably end up having to crop it. But if you do it into a scanner, the scanner will scan it straight into a program that's really easy to crop. And once you've got that size once, you pretty much can just pull that one out, put the next one in, scan it, save it. Then once you do that, the way you import it in, it depends on what music program you're using, how you import it to connect it to the music.
How are you listening to your music? Do you just double-click on a music file, or do you have a program that plays all your music for you?
Well, I've loaded most of my CD collection into my computer, and I'm using the Microsoft Media Player, I think it's called. And
it's Windows Media Player?
Yes.
Yeah.
And just click on it, and it's starts playing.
And
I'm also loading the library into an MP3 player too. And, it just looks kind of bare without the album cover.
I agree.
What's the MP3 player?
It's a SanDisk clip sport, I think it's called, or sport clip.
Okay.
Is it on a laptop or a desktop computer that you have your music library?
A desktop.
I was going to say maybe you could go get internet connectivity just long enough.
Get a coffee house to download all the images.
It really would save a lot of work. Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty manual task that you're about to undertake.
Well, I realize that, but I'm kind of retired, and don't have a hell of a lot of things to do.
Nothing but time. All right.
And that's one of the reasons why I was thinking about a digital camera, because I would kind of like to get into photography.
If you're looking for an excuse to get a digital camera, though, you don't have to, you know, use like CD cover art as a crutch. Just go get a camera, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean,
but that's why I was calling, you know, so I could buy a proper camera where I could get that job done. But since you mentioned the scanners, I might end up getting a scanner and a camera, you know.
Right.
Well, you can get a scanner that'll do that pretty cheap. I mean, I would think you could get a good scanner that could do that for $50, maybe less.
I think I might get a scanner for under $100, maybe even under around $50 to get just a flatbed scanner that you plug into the USB of your computer, and then you can scan the artwork.
Okay, do you guys recommend any brand names?
No, I mean, they're all kind of made equal. Brother, HP,
Epson,
people like that. But in terms of the camera, I guess it really depends on, you know, you can spend as little or as much money as you want to spend on a digital camera.
Okay.
And there are a number of good cameras out there. I wouldn't even know how to tell you where to start. I would probably suggest that since you are just wanting to explore the beginnings of photography, that you get something on the inexpensive side.
Absolutely, yes.
Get something that's, you know, in the $600 or less range.
How many pixels should I go for?
Doesn't matter. I mean, they all have enough megapixels to shoot just fine with. And Canon and Nikon make some nice kind of mid-level point-and-shoot cameras. Just so you can get the idea of what it's like to shoot a digital picture, pull that onto your computer and play with it and see what you get.
Alrighty.
What side of town do you live on? You're not on the north side by any chance, are you?
No. It's northwest, out by Northwest Mall, 34th and 290.
Oh, well, that's not too bad. There is we talked about earlier on the show, there's a 1960 PC users group. So, of course, that's going to be like 1960 Jones Road, but not, you know, in that general direction. And they have a digital photography special interest group that meets from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Once a month. And they bring a lot of people that aren't necessarily familiar with digital cameras up to speed. They answer a lot of questions, and they usually do like a little, you know, 45-minute presentation on how to do stuff with cameras.
Mm-hmm.
That might be something you just might want to consider if you ever need some, you know, some hands-on experience, have any questions. They, you know, depending on how far that is, but you can find, well, I was going to say you could find them on the web, but without an internet connection.
Listen, I've been wanting to, you know, to get an internet connection, but, you know, the more I hear about all these, you know, the security, you know, everybody's getting hacked, and it ruins your computer and all this, it just scares the hell out of me. Not that I have any deep, dark secrets on my computer, you know, but, you know, I just don't like the idea of having people just, you know, looking into my stuff, you know. It just...
Well, you know, that's really, I mean, you can mitigate that by, you know, if you have high-speed internet with a router, nobody's going to really be messing around on your computer. I mean, a lot of what that comes from that is people just not acting smart when they go out on the internet.
Listen, I listen to your show quite a bit, and understanding that you have a Comcast connection, would it be improper for me to ask how much you pay for your...
It would.
I don't know if we can talk about that on air, just because of station policy.
We're not supposed to talk prices on things like that. I would say if you had an internet connection, you could go look it up.
Yeah.
But since you don't have an internet connection.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're talking two digits, you know, not a lot of money for a basic connection. You could probably get a basic connection through AT&T or Comcast for somewhere in the range of $20.
Yeah, there's stuff out there in extreme low two digits.
Yeah, so you could definitely get down to where you're paying $20-something a month. You could even consider getting a tablet or a smartphone that has internet access. But
internet's better than no internet. So, I mean, right. Even the cheapest you're going to pay is going to get you to where you can actually get cover art.
Okay.
Right.
Well, listen, guys, I really appreciate your advice and your counseling. And maybe one of these days I'll... You know, talk to you over the internet.
All right. Well, thanks for your call.
Okay. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
All right. 713-526-5730. We've got about 30 minutes left in the show. It looks like we got a lot of phone calls all of a sudden, so that's going for us. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next, we are going to speak with Ernie.
Hello.
Hi, Ernie. Long time no hear from. No?
Yeah. Hey, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know. It depends on how this comes.
I think all that talk about Betamaxes and IROC Zs brought him out.
It summoned him. So what's going on? What can we do for you tonight?
Well, I had a problem. I used to have Dish TV, and I had an internet connection with them, and I had no problem with my computer connecting with it at all. And then I switched to AT&T, and now it's locked me out, even though I had 3 out of 5 bars on my wireless connection to the modem. And I was wondering if you knew something about that setup, even though I have a good signal strength. It just does not show on my wireless card.
So you're saying that you have a good, solid wireless connection to your satellite connection.
Right.
But you're not getting any internet, or is it going really slow, or what?
Well, I switched from one service to another. From Dish to AT&T.
Okay.
And it's a copper wire.
Copper wire DSL?
Yeah.
Okay. So they provided you with a DSL modem, and you are connected to that with you have a wireless access point. Does it come with wireless?
Yes, it does come with wireless, but it does not even show any kind of, it does not show at all on my, on my computer.
So when you go to click the wireless that you're going to connect to, you don't see your Wi-Fi access point.
Right. I disconnected. I turned off the wireless and the wired, and then turned off the internet connection, and then turned those back on, and I didn't get any kind of signal recognition for that connection.
Do you have only the one wireless device, or do you have other devices that are connecting to it that can see it?
Yes, there's other devices that can see it, but then when they recognize it and bring up specifically the label for it, the signal drops down. Like it's been seen and instantly ignored. It's kind of strange.
That is kind of strange. Is it? Is this all your Franken computers that you've built from stuff that you found by the side of the road? Is it possible that you have outdated Wi-Fi technology that can't connect to this modern Wi-Fi? I mean, I guess they were connected before, right? They were connected to the satellite.
Yeah, it has B&G wireless, and it has BG and N for the wireless at the modem.
And is it the wireless that's on the modem, is that provided by AT&T?
Yes, it is.
Okay. It may be that you need to contact them to see if there's a problem with it. Was it working when they first installed it, or has it never worked?
Oh, it's worked under Dish Network.
But it's a different Wi-Fi access point, right?
Right.
So your AT&T service has never worked Wi-Fi?
No. It works with other devices, but not with a number of other devices, too. You know, some it did and some it didn't. Some of the N-listed numbers also do not work with that. It's kind of strange.
Well, I would does anything connect to it reliably that actually works all the time?
Yes.
Okay. What is that? What is it that connects and works all the time? Is it a laptop? Is it an iPad? What is it?
It is a desktop.
So you're connecting to it. You have a Wi-Fi card installed in the desktop.
It's also a PlayStation.
Okay, so you have a desktop with Wi-Fi. And a PlayStation that both connect to your Wi-Fi access point, and they work fine.
Right.
Okay.
But those have wireless in connectivity.
Right. So I would assume that the modem is in mixed mode, so it allows for connections from N mm-hmm. devices and from G devices and maybe from B devices. But at least N and G, it should allow those to connect.
Right.
So the ones that are not connecting, how old are these computers?
Well, mine's about 6 years old.
Right. The one thing that you... Okay, let's just take that one computer that's not seeing the Wi-Fi and it's not connecting.
Right.
Does it see any other Wi-Fi access points?
No.
Okay, so it's not seeing any from your neighbors or anything like that?
It only sees one neighbor at most, anyways.
Okay, but it is at least seeing something every once in a while.
Right.
All right, so I don't know why it wouldn't be seeing the one that's, like, right next to it.
Uh-huh.
But it's possible that it's just the drivers are so far out of date or the hardware's out of date that it cannot associate with your access point.
That's what I thought. I wanted to consult with somebody more professional.
What I would do is I would get it connected. It should have an Ethernet port on the on that computer. Run an Ethernet connection to the modem. Get the computer on the internet and go and update your Wi-Fi drivers and update whatever else you can while you're at it. But try updating the Wi-Fi driver to see if that might help it.
Okay.
And if that doesn't work, you can pick up a USB Wi-Fi
dongle.
Dongle that might allow it to connect to the access point.
Just get an 802.11 in one.
Get an 802.11 USB dongle. They don't cost very much. And plug that into the computer. Maybe that'll let you get on the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that'll be upgradable when I upgrade the motherboard, if not the whole machine, too.
All right.
That's great. Hey, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks for your call, Ernie.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, it's been a long time since we heard from Ernie, but I think that Betamax caller probably fished him out of the woodwork.
We don't have the King Ernie theme music anymore, though.
I don't remember the King Ernie.
You remember that?
No.
Maybe Pete had it on his laptop or something at some point. Whenever Ernie would call, I think, for a while there, we would play it. You know, it was the trumpets, you know, going, dun, 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 dun.
I don't remember us being that clever. All right. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we are going to speak with Ray.
Ray, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. I had a quick question. I'm setting up a little tablet to receive information from emails from my desktop. And it keeps asking me for an IMAP setting. And I just got off with my internet provider, and they claim that they don't have an IMAP setting. They got the POP and the SMTP, but
who's your internet? Who's your email provider?
CenturyLink.
CenturyLink. So you're trying to configure the mail application on the is it an iPad?
On the tablet.
What kind of tablet is it?
It's a little Dell. It's Windows 8.
Windows 8.
Yeah.
All right. So basically, if it's Windows 8, it's using. I guess it's got the Windows Live Mail is one way that it could connect to that. It doesn't have to be IMAP. You could connect using POP.
Okay.
So maybe try to configure the mail client up to... I know that, like, on an iPhone or an Android tablet device, that the mail app likes to use IMAP. But they can be should be able to be configured to use POP.
It looks like CenturyLink will do IMAP. They don't do it on the standard port. They only do IMAP over SSL. So if you know how to get into, you know, where you actually configure your mail server,
right.
it'll be like a few different options, but you can either do like auto detect on the encryption or you can say SSL and then it may change the port to like 543 or 541, but type in 993.
993.
And it's mail.centurylink.net. And if you just Google CenturyLink IMAP server port settings, mm-hmm. you'll get to the same page I did, their support page. But okay. That may be what's going wrong. They don't do IMAP over non-SSL. It's only SSL, and it's on a possibly non-standard port,
okay.
993.
I'll just make sure that it's got the SSL. I just wondered if there was I was missing something here.
Well, it's interesting that their own tech support couldn't tell you that they did IMAP if they have a page clearly saying that they do.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Hey, you run into that sometimes.
Yeah, you sure do.
One time I was with CenturyLink, and they kept telling me it was embarkmail.com or whatever. And I was talking to the tech support people, and I couldn't set up the account on my laptop. And all this time, they had changed it, and the new people didn't know that there was a change. They were supposed to go to CenturyLink.net and whatever. Hmm. And they kept telling me embark.mail and all that stuff. But anyways, yeah, that's one of those things.
Wow.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate you guys. Hey, I'm the way that sent you guys pizza like a year and a half ago.
Oh, hey. Wow.
And,
thank you. We're still enjoying that.
Since then, but, hey, I appreciate you guys out.
All right, thanks.
Maybe you'll get some pizza from all of the other people.
All right.
Yeah, maybe. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, good night. Thanks. Good night. Bye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pizza.
Pizza.
Yeah, I started to realize that the tech support people aren't like they used to be, and I know that sounds like all. I got my boss a Nexus 5 because he wanted one, and I guess he's got up a Sprint, and I called Sprint, and at corporate they said, yes, you can get a micro SIM for that. And I went to two Sprint stores, and they said, no, Sprint doesn't do SIMs. And I called, and they do. You know, they just, some people might not know.
They have what?
Oh, the style of communication on the phone?
Yeah.
The phone network? They don't have CDMA, do they? Is it CDMA?
Sprint CDMA.
Okay.
So that's what I'm wondering, like, if they have a micro SIM, how that's going to work. I mean, because it's GSM.
I don't. Apparently they do, though, because I Googled, and you can get a Nexus 5 on that network. But don't ask in the actual stores, because they don't know.
Huh. I'm just trying to... I don't know how that works. I mean, there's... Because the SIM cards are pretty much just for GSM network. There's actually, because on a CDMA networks, the phone ICMI or whatever code that they use on CDMA is actually hard coded onto the phone. Like you, there's only like a certain areas of maybe like somewhere in Central Asia and maybe parts of Japan or something that they started coming out with CDMA phones that actually have SIM cards that you can change out the. Like GSM network.
Yeah, I don't know how they're doing it. One of my developers has a Nexus 5 through Sprint, and it's fine. And then they said that they do have SIM cards for quote-unquote select handsets. So I don't know what other handsets have them. And they sell the Nexus 5 through the Sprint store, which I thought maybe like they were doing, you know, like LG would just do a phone with a radio or, you know, like somehow bypass the SIM card just for Sprint.
The iPhones, you know, they built both in, so they can do CDMA.
I don't think
GSM.
Google's doing that, or whether LG. I think LG, the only options you can choose on the Nexus 5 is color and size.
We'll just take mine apart later and figure it out.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Dissecting phones. All right. 713-526-5738. We've got about 20 minutes left in the show. We've got one call in the queue, which we're going to go to here in a moment. But if you want to be on the air with us, we do have time for that to happen, and you could speak to the Groove House. Speak.
That's
to
me.
Yes, it is.
That's me.
That's me. Oh, I just have to share my parrot has done something silly. He's come up with a new thing. So
it's me.
No, not an irritating Dwight Silverman thing. No. So he used to a long time ago. He used to say peekaboo, and he said it peekaboo in my voice. Peekaboo, peekaboo, and. So lately, Cynthia wanted to resurrect the peekaboo, so Cynthia's been trying to get him to say peekaboo by saying it in her high-pitched, Cynthia, peekaboo, peekaboo, and giving him a treat. And now he's starting to, so now he does it, and he does it in her voice, not my voice. But also, to make it even more interesting, is he's turning it into a song, so now he starts going, peekaboo, peekaboo, peekaboo. Peekaboo, peekaboo, peekaboo. So he's modified it into his own thing.
Cool.
It's really weird.
Got a jazz parrot.
Yeah.
Jazz parrot. Be scatting here in a minute.
So that's me. That's what I should teach him. Hey, it's Dilly. That's me.
Cool.
You have to come over. You'll teach him. Because he'd like your voice for that. All right. So who do we have up, Groovehouse?
All right. Up next, we are going to speak with Ed.
Ed, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Something's happening. The network's down. It's not connecting.
Uh-oh. Yes.
There it is. There it
Hello?
Is.
Hello, Ed.
Yeah, hi. Hey, my daughter has free Wi-Fi in her apartment, but with what Xfinity has done lately, she can now pick up the Xfinity Wi-Fi, and it is actually faster speed than the Wi-Fi that her apartment gives her. So we use that when we're over there on iPhones and so forth. But I've noticed that like if you set the phone down and go back to it, it has snapped back to the Wi-Fi that her apartment offers, even though we had selected the Xfinity.
And I actually tweeted Dwight about this, and he says just go in and select the apartment Wi-Fi and click forget this network. And
yeah.
I'm going to do that next time I'm over there. But what is causing the iPads and iPhones and to snap back to the
they're jumping on whatever
Wi-Fi rather than stay on what we selected, which was the Xfinity Wi-Fi.
Once you associate with the Wi-Fi, then the device sees that as a viable Wi-Fi to connect to, and if the signal gets stronger than the signal you're connected to, it'll jump onto that.
Oh, okay.
So if it loses connectivity to the Wi-Fi that you've told it to join for any reason, and then it goes to rejoin, it's going to pick whatever it feels like picking based on whatever criteria the system has set up for itself.
Okay.
This is where we're talking about the rise of the machines and the intelligent, you know, awareness and intelligence of computers. This is the first step.
Right.
It's going to get on the Wi-Fi it wants to. So Dwight's suggestion that you got via the Twitters is valid. If you tell it to forget that network, and as long as you don't have auto join networks turned on, it won't connect to it anymore.
Okay, great. Well, like I say, we'll try that next time I'm up there. And yeah, I wasn't trying to second guess Dwight, but I just don't dare.
As
to why it did snap back, and you did answer that for me.
Now, you know, between Twitter and this show, you will get all of your answers.
I think so.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Bye.
Dwight Silverman, helping people from beyond the Twitterverse. You know who gets the most of his computer questions answered via Twitter? Kojo. And his excuse last time was that he just couldn't be bothered to type. You read Google on a smartphone. Flick is just laughing because he knows it's true. He knows it's true. All right. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, we've got about 15 minutes left in this episode of Technology Bites as we plunge towards the 10 o'clock hour when we get the heck out of here and go do something maybe not computer related or something. We'll see how that goes. But right now we are still in the heart of Geek Town, driving our van through Tech Town. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, we are going to speak with Don.
Don, you're on the air with Technology
Bites. Yeah, hey guys, how y'all this evening, man?
Good.
I wish y'all have a big pile of phone callers there, but sometimes it gets kind of slow, I know, so I feel guilty and have to call.
Well, you know, pity calls are okay, I guess.
Yeah. Anyway, question, real simple thing. I should have been able to figure this out myself. I've done this long enough. But, you know, I've got Windows 8.1 in front of me here on my laptop. And on the mail screen, I guess that's, you called it Windows Live Mail, the mail that comes with 8.1. On the lower left-hand corner of the main mail screen here, you have your the addresses. You know, your address, apparently you can have multiple addresses down there. You can just touch on touch screen or cursor touch whichever one, it'll bring that mail up for you in front of you. I've got duplicates here, and I've got like my normal mail account from, well, it's an old SW Bell type account address, and that's how they abbreviate it in the lower left-hand corner. But above it is the same thing. In other words, I got two of them. How can I get? I haven't figured out a way to get rid of that duplicate name off my mail address at the bottom down here. Can y'all bring this screen like that up? Does anybody have a Windows mail that they can?
I'm trying to see if I can load up, quickly bring up a virtual machine of Windows 8. So it's Windows 8, not Windows 8.1.
Yeah, 8.1, yeah.
Okay, good. So let me see. I'm going to go to...
Just bring, like, your mail account up for that Windows mail screen. And at the lower left-hand corner, there's you can select different mail accounts of your own. If you have multiple mail accounts... Well, I've got only one account, but it's duplicated twice down here in the lower left-hand corner.
So have you tried going into the mail settings to see if it exists twice?
I can't find anything. You can click on the one I don't want, and you know, you get a bar coming at the bottom of the screen with a bunch of stuff on it, you know, junk, flag, delete. But I don't, you know, that's just for deleting mail in within that. But, yeah. I just can't. I don't. When I set the screen up somehow, I think it duplicated the same address twice and just stuck them down in the lower left-hand corner because I've only had the machine for about 3 months. But so anyway, I just should I clean it up? It's not impeding anything or causing problems. I just got annoyed that I couldn't get rid of it.
Right. So let me see. I'm getting logged into my Windows 8 machine. If it will let me log in, we'll see if I can remember my password. It's been so long since I've had to log into this. There we go. Okay, so I'm looking at all my tiles, and I got a mail icon. Mail icon's in the upper left-hand corner.
Right.
So you're saying...
Just go to your mail screen, like you'd pull up your mail, and once the mail screen comes up, if you've got any mail, you'll have it there on your screen. But the lower left-hand corner, you should have an abbreviation for your mail address there, which... you have multiple addresses. Apparently, you can stack them there on the left hand side. It'll stack them all.
Yeah, I don't have multiple addresses, so I guess if I click plus, I can. No, that's going to create a new message.
Yeah. I haven't figured out a way just to get rid of one of those addresses if you don't want it there. Just completely delete.
Well, my guess is that you have multiple mail accounts configured in your mail client.
Okay.
Or personalities. They used to call them personalities, but I don't know if that still applies anymore. So
how would I get to that then?
I would be looking for, settings probably in the control panel. So let's see. Actually, if you bring out the, I'm trying to find the mail. There's got to be a control panel mail setting or something where you have your mail accounts configured. But let's see. Yeah, if you open up the control panel and you go to mail and you go to mail 32-bit, you should have maybe a list of profiles that are set up on the computer. But I don't know the answer to that right off the top of my head.
In the next show or something, you want to mention it, you can find it and mention it. I'm always listening, so just make a comment.
All right, but I would say do a Google search on edit mail account.
And that's Windows, a phrase that Windows I don't know 8. How to. You know, I didn't know what how to phrase that.
Yeah,
so I would have done a Google search.
Edit mail account Windows 8.1, and you might find some tips on how to get in there.
How to get rid of those extra things. Okay, that'll help me. Okay, guys. Well, I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thanks for your call. Sir. Good luck. Thanks.
I'm jealous of my brother. He lives in Austin, and Devo is actually doing a tour right now of called Devo Hardcore, and so they're actually doing all their stuff from 74 to 77, like back before they had a record deal. It's like all their old stuff that they're doing on a tour right now. So
they're
actually
there
watching them tonight.
They're in Austin?
Tonight,
and they're not coming to Houston?
I didn't see them coming to Houston. But it would be... I mean, I'm not sure how they're doing the music, because the thing is, that early on, 74 through 77, like, they were pretty avant-garde, like, experimental, like, art, like, post-punk, new wave, experimental art stuff. And so their music was a lot more... quirky and bizarre and disjointed than it was as time went on. As time went on, it got more and more polished. And now, I mean, the shows I've seen them a couple times, even when they do some older songs, it's like, you know, very polished versions, you know.
That's terrible, because the tour, it looks like the last date of the tour is that Austin show tonight. And before that was Solana Beach, Los Angeles, Oakland, Vancouver, Seattle, Denver, St. Charles, New York City, and Baltimore. But maybe they will, add some more shows to the tour date.
Of course, they're older, you know, and so it's cool to see them. I've seen them a couple times, but I'd never seen them until a few years ago. It was the first time I ever saw them. But I go back, like, on YouTube or whatever, and I watch shows from like, and plus I've got some DVDs, shows from like 80, 81, even 82, 83. Man, they were just, the shows were insane. Like, they had so much energy, and it was so just chaotic sometimes, and just, it was, they were really awesome live. I mean, there's, it's still good, but it's not the same.
Like, yeah, Are We Not Old Men was a lot lower energy.
You know, and I, the first time I saw Devo after they had officially kind of become old, I guess this was probably in the early 90s, early to mid-90s, they came through and they did a tour, and they weren't dressed up in jumpsuits or anything. They were just kind of dressed in normal clothes, and when they came out on stage, they came in and they sat down. They had, like, stools, and they had their instruments, and they did a song, and they said, after they did the song, I don't even remember what song it was, it's just, well, you're probably wondering why we're sitting down, and I guess they were pretty bitter because they said, the reason we're sitting down is because we wanted to prove that we could still do that after so many years of taking it.
That's a shtick that they've done for years, because I actually have a live album that was released on Enigma of shows that they did during the late 80s, I think.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things. They actually would say that. It's actually on the recording. They're like, you might be asking yourself, or you might be wondering, why we're sitting down. It's to prove that we still can after all these years in the business. That's basically what they said.
But,
yeah. They did like a country version of, on that album, they do a country version of, I want to say of, I don't remember now. Are We Not Men? Yeah, I think they did like a country steel guitar version of Are We Not Men.
Well, I saw...
It's a pretty cool show.
I saw them when they were still skinny and young, like, you know... I guess it wasn't the late 70s, the early 80s when I saw them at Cullen Theater, and that was a great show. And their shows late here recently, you know, the last couple of tours they've come through have been pretty good.
Yeah, they kind of got re-energized and came back together and kind of... did a modern take on what they used to be.
But right. Mark Mothersbaugh has found you live with, I guess, hanging out with Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
Like a Houston director, because he's done pretty much, I don't know, did he do stuff on Bottle Rocket?
A ton of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so I know he did like almost, you know, the majority of the score for Rushmore and a lot of like everything that wasn't like ripped off from the 70s actual real, you know, vinyl somewhere. It was probably written by Mark, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure he did help do the soundtrack.
I think he did, because I think I've got like a best of whatever the stuff he did for, you know, for Anderson, and I think there's a Bottle Rocket song or two on there. Like,
yeah,
maybe the theme song,
did.
I think, yeah.
Well, that's the Devo show.
Almost out of time. We're wrapping up, huh?
Yeah, well, I had some good calls tonight. We appreciate that. We have a geek gathering this Friday at Cons. If you're in town and you find yourself at Loose Ends, come and hang out with us.
You're driving through town and you think, I don't want to listen to the radio. I want to go sit down and hang out somewhere.
Well, this time was like, I was driving through town. I thought I heard Ernie. And we're like, you did.
All right. Well, that sound tells us it's time to go. And, you know, it's good because it's late and we're old and we're tired, cranky. And it's time to do something else.
Got work to do.
Got to make the...
Time to take this episode out behind the barn and do what needs to be done.
Got
to
make the oxen sed.
Old Yeller. Take Old Yeller out behind the barn.
Oh, man.
Oh,
jeez.
That's really horribly sad.
Going to take this computer support group to the HAL PC SIG.
Tech Bites is foaming at the mouth. Don't have a lot of options.
All right, well, thanks for tuning in.
Jeez.
Perfect show.
Roof house fell on the well.
All right, I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's a
roof
house. We'll see you next week for more Technology Bites.
28. Say it with a grin. On Saturday, July 26th, the Last Concert Cafe and KPFT present the 28th annual Watermelon Dance and Summer Social. All of your friends will be there and your favorite performers too. The lineup for number 28 includes Charity Ann, Matt Patera, Charlie Bryant, the Annie B Band, Jimmy Lee Dean, Kindred Spirits, Marina Rocks, Q&A, Pot Roast, and for the 27th time in 28 years, the Hightailers Plus, all the way from Holland, the JBT Band. Doors open at 4, where your $20 fee for one or $30 for two benefits Community Radio KPFT. The Last Concert Cafe is located at 1403 Nant Street, just off the Hardy McKee exit on I-10. Their number is 713-226-8563. Free ice-cold watermelon. The other red meat is served complimentary to cool you off from all the grinning and dancing you're going to be doing. Remember, number 28 on July 26th, doors at 4 at the Last Concert Cafe, a benefit for 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
When you donate a car, truck, motorcycle, SUV, RV, or boat, we turn what is often a burden to many people into great educational programming. Join others in your community by donating a car and helping create opportunities for local arts, music, and culture to flourish. KPFT's vehicle donation program offers fast, free pickup and towing from anywhere, an easy donation process, and the best charitable tax deduction around. Call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org to donate. Again, that's 1-855-KPFT-CAR to help out now. Thanks. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.